So what we're going to talk about today is, we're here to do communication, but we just want to check that we are coming through okay. So Nerida, would you mind letting us know if the sound quality is decent at your end? Because we'd like to get underway as quickly as we can. Hi to everybody else who's out there. Hi, Edward. How are you? You're well. And Chris, how are you? You're good? You guys looking forward to today? Yeah, pretty exciting. Got here early, which you cancelled golf. How important can it be? Okay, so Nerida's telling us that sound is good, and I can see some people walking up the stairs. So we're going to just quickly check in with something from before, which is a way of getting started, but allowing for us to get a couple of people in on board. Okay, so Ed, what I want to do is check in on the progress of writing the book, mate. So how are you going? Look behind you, there's a microphone. Now it's in front of you.
I've been put on the spot big time, haven't I?
Well, let's just see how you're going.
Well, since that amazing public commitment, I've written four chapters. So
you've written four chapters?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And the schedule would say that you would be up to...
I'm still behind schedule, but getting to a period of the year where I've got less clients, and so I'm looking forward to investing that time into the book.
Great. So it's possible you could get back on schedule?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not possible. I will.
Mm. Well, you have to because?
Mm. Well, you see, I haven't told my wife about it, but I've told a few other my clients when they were procrastinating.
That. You better say it out loud so that people understand what we're doing.
Those of you who are listening, it was in that...
must have been...
July, which was the mid-year accelerator.
Yep.
That I made a public commitment with some one-on-one coaching within the session that we set a date for the end of January for the completion of the book, because it was a goal that kept on getting pushed back because of work commitments. So yep. We organised the time and worked it out and how many hours and how many chapters and how many pages that would be and how many words that would be. And we went through pretty methodically and we came up with end of January as a possible schedule. So
for a completed manuscript.
And if it's not there, my wedding ring of nearly 50 years goes to yours truly, who is standing in front of you.
And I'll melt it down and...
And it's pretty scary, I can tell you.
sharing with the wife about what you've done. So that's, you'll see the value in not just a public declaration, but something connected to it in terms of what we call penalties and rewards. And so what we didn't figure out, Ed, was what's the reward for getting the manuscript completed. So you might think about that during the course of the day and we'll check in later. What would be a good reward, you know, something that's that signifies that you did this. And I'm going to explain, while you're thinking about this, I'm going to explain the value of this in the coaching process. Essentially, what we need to do is surround ourselves with things which remind us that we actually completed tasks and we did things and that we're a person of our word. So it's one thing to be negatively motivated, and that's, you know, what we're talking about there with Edward's wedding ring, is that that's a negative motivator and it has its place. The trouble is, if it's the only thing that you have, then the place that it has is kind of a bit of a problem, because we are negatively motivated rather than positively. So long term, you would want to think about what is the reward you get for doing the things that you said that you would do. That builds in you a sense of self-respect, a sense of self-reliability, a sense of I'm a person of my word. And typically what most of us do when we give ourselves a reward is take ourselves out for dinner or something like that. The trouble with that is once you've eaten it, it's gone. So, you know, if you can get some little statue or some little significant thing, whether it's you go on, maybe, Edward, what you do is you... talk to your wife about having a diamond added to your wedding ring. You know, maybe you can find a $500 diamond, just a little thing that sits in there. Maybe it could be $10,000. That's really that's your department, not mine, but it sits in there. And every time you see that little sparkle, it reminds you that you are a person who reaches their goals and their targets. And that has massive value compared to anything else that we have. You'll see that it's not really a thing that you could use, but the reminder really, really works in terms of reminding yourself about getting there and doing it and getting through difficult times and all the things that we want to remind ourselves about our character. When the reward is something that disappears, you know, a holiday, some new clothes, all those things are going to pass through. But what could you permanently have around? You know, we had a big victory many years ago, maybe 30 years ago, we had a big victory. It was a big job that we got. We did a firewalk in Melbourne for a couple of thousand people, and it was a corporate gig. So I was paid by the corporation rather than individuals. And so what we did with the money, because it was quite a substantial amount of money, was we put a deck all the way along the front of our house and all the way around the side, 3 metres wide, 40 metres long, and then the same on the end. And forever and a day, that deck reminds me of that victory. So as long as the deck is on the house, whenever I see a picture of the house, whenever you know there's a barbecue or anything, for everybody else, it's just a deck. For me, it's a reminder of a professional high. So what can you do that is a sort of a significant reminder of important things in your life? So think about that. It really doesn't matter what it is. You know, I've suggested a small or a large diamond in your ring. You may have much better ideas than that. And maybe people out there can make suggestions as well. So perhaps that's your background assignment for those of you at home, is to figure out what Ed could do to remind himself of that victory and how that could be a permanent thing. You'll see that it's kind of not really that material. The funny thing about something like a diamond is that once you've parted with the money, then the diamond in the ring has no actual value. You look at it, but you don't use it to buy bread or to get a new car or whatever, and you're never going to sell it. So it's a bit of a strange thing to do. But many of the significant things in our life have more significant sentimental value or emotional value than physical. You know, Mary's diamond ring that we bought when we had no money, and we got engaged when in 1975. That'll never get sold. It'll go on to our children. So the money that was spent on that is basically never coming back. And yet, you wouldn't swap the diamond for the money because of the promise, the value, the sentimental value, the emotions wrapped up in it. Those kind of things. So we're pretty weird like that. Having said all of that, it's time for us to get underway. I presume there's a bunch of people out there live streaming in, so welcome to you all. I hope some of my favourite people are out there. You're all my favourites, so as soon as you start talking back to me, I can start talking to you. So you can say hello or whatever. We're going to start with what I think is probably going to be one of the most powerful sessions we've ever done, and that's because we're going to talk about communication. And communication is something that we do every day, whether we know that we're doing it or whether we don't know that we're doing it. Communication is kind of like a constant in our life, and it's a thing that continually buggers up. I want to show you, the purpose of this image is to demonstrate to you how small a change can change the meaning of an entire sentence. So grammar, the difference between feeling your nuts and feeling your nuts. Staggering concept. What makes a difference in the meaning of the feeling your nuts is one apostrophe and one letter. So we add an E and an apostrophe and we change the meaning of the expression. You can imagine if this can be done in one sentence, what can happen? And this is the written word, which is a lot easier to work with in many ways, although it has many handicaps. So you can imagine the differences that happen in tone of voice and language use, those kind of things. So the funny thing about communication is that when you think about it, poor or inadequate communication pretty much is the most cited reason for divorce. In fact, the most cited reason for divorce is arguments over money. But when you think about it, money is just an inanimate object. So when we have arguments about an inanimate object, it's actually about the way we communicate. It's also the most common source or cause of conflict. And I'm sure you've had, just those of you in the room, we've got three men in the room at the moment, no women. That's an interesting thing. So you three guys there, how often have you found yourself saying, "I never said that"? Has that ever happened? That or a variation of it. In other words, what happens is that men tend to think and speak literally. Women tend to think and speak emotionally. And so quite often, one of the difficulties in conflict is our different interpretation of the meanings of the words that we're using. Communication is the number one problem in businesses that are losing money. And yet, most people identify themselves as above average communicators. Think about that for a second. If the majority of people say that they're above average, is that possible? Is that mathematically possible? No. So why is it? I want to hear your guess. Why is it that most people think they're above average when it comes to communicating? Any thoughts on that from you guys in the room? I'll grab the microphone. This is an unexpected question.
I suspect a large amount of it is we understand what we're saying, so we assume naturally everybody else does.
That's pretty much it. Is it's clear as a bell to me? So why? The thinking is, if it's clear as a bell to me, then if it's not clear to you, there's not a problem with the words. There's a problem with your intelligence, your ability to understand that kind of thing. When you think about it, it's pretty clear that communication issues the communication skills are really the foundation of every level of success. Whether you want to be successful in relationships, whether you want to be successful in health, whether it's finances, happiness, whatever, what you'll find is that communication is a bottom line skill as far as generating success, which is why I'm saying today is going to be such an interesting thing to look at. So what I want you to do is imagine a situation. So imagine buying a car. So this will be just theoretical. Have a look at it from this point of view. Would you say to yourself, is now the right time? Have any of you had that thing about, should I now or should I later? Have any of you guys had that? Yeah, we could be talking about buying a house. We could be talking about starting a business. We could be talking about a relationship or whatever. We're just going to stick with the car because it's easy. If you come to the conclusion that now is the right time, that's fine. But quite often we're going to come to the conclusion, no, the time's not right because something else needs doing or there's some other level of importance. So now's not the right time. If we come to the conclusion now's not the right time, we'll pretty much dump the subject and I'm going to say, okay, you can go back to daydreaming. Because quite often what we do is we go, well, is now the right time? Well, what would I buy? Well, I'd love one of those blah, blah, blahs or whatever. Or if it's not, I'd love one of those, it's kind of like, well, who cares about cars and I'd rather have whatever. So one way or another, we go from, no, I'm not going to do it. So the brain goes on to whatever else it was going to be developing or thinking about or whatever. If now is the right time or is looking like the right time, then what we do is we go to the next question, which is, all right, well, how much are we going to spend? Is there a budget? Does the budget matter? How does this budget fit within the budget for our household in terms of our overall finances? If there is a budget for the car, so we are going to buy a car, then how does that relate to what we're spending on our mortgage payments? How does it relate to our retirement funding? How does that relate to saving up for a holiday? Would I rather have a holiday than a car? Would I rather have something else, et cetera, et cetera? If there's no budget for it, then basically there's no car. That much is pretty simple. If we go, okay, yeah, we can find the money for it, then we go to the next question. And the next question, by the way, these are not necessarily in this order. This is just kind of like randomly tumbling out through our minds. This is kind of like a conversation you could have in the shower with yourself or while you're at the gym or whilst you're sitting in a traffic jam. And it may not go in this order. What I'm wanting to demonstrate is something separate to this conversation. So are we going to rent the car? Are we going to buy the car? Are we going to lease the car? If the answer is, oh God, dealing with the banks is too much of a pain in the ass, you know, I haven't got the tax returns up to date, therefore that's just a pain in the ass, maybe I'm going to forget about the car altogether. If I'm kind of brave enough to tackle that, then I'm going to go, okay, so what is the next question? All right, well, how much per month gets me what kind of car? Now, that's not necessarily the question everybody asks. What I'm suggesting here is that there's a transition now in what we do is we kind of progress on and then we start to just do a whole bunch of things. All right, so how is the car going to get used? The reason we say how is the car going to get used is because, well, that determines what kind of car we'll buy. So if we need to carry lots of stuff, maybe the car's going to be a ute. If we don't need to carry lots of stuff, then maybe who's going to drive it and what do they like and what will they be comfortable in? Is it going to go off-road? Is it going to do lots of highway mileage? Is it going to do short runs between home and work that are only 3 or 4 kilometres long each or any of those kind of things? So, and then what's it going to cost to run the car? Not just in terms of petrol, but rego, tyres, insurance, those kind of things. And then maybe I should think about 2 smaller cars instead of one that I was looking at in the beginning. In other words, what maybe 1 car and 1 bike, or 2 smaller cars, would that suit us better? And then how does insurance affect all of that? And will we qualify for the finance? And what about resale values in 5 years when I go to sell the car? Which cars are going to retain their value the most? And should I be thinking about that? If that's the case, then do I buy top of the line? Or do I buy entry level, or what am I, you know, whereabouts within the range of that car? You know, if you look at a C-Class Mercedes, you can start at 40 grand, but you can easily spend 150. So the range of what's available in that particular model, quite extensive. So whereabouts do I go into that level? And then how many doors does it need? Does it need a hatchback? Should it have 2 doors, 4 doors, 5 doors, whatever? And then how many people has it got to fit? So, for example, when we were buying a car recently, then we were making sure that it could fit all of us plus a baby seat because of the new granddaughter. That saves us buying a second car. So a bigger car that can fit more but fit a baby seat is a better option for us than 2 cars, because a bigger car is only a few thousand extra, but a second car, a completely different thing. And then it can't be yellow, or it can't be green, or there are many personal idiosyncrasies that are deal killers. So we look at it from that point of view. I've coloured the screen, getting darker and darker grey. So we have this kind of, this narrowing down of the questions that are going to help us in terms of whether we're buying the car, what kind of car, those sort of things. When it comes to watching what's going on in your mind, there's a couple of stages that I reckon are worth looking at. And the first one is, I've kind of animated these differently, is that as we move down the screen, we're getting more serious. The more time you spend on it, the more likely you're going to make the purchase. When we go from getting serious to ready to actually do a deal, and by the time we're thinking how many doors has it got to have and it can't be yellow, then the chances are we're ready to do a deal. And if the right car jumped in front of us, then we'd be thinking maybe this is for me, or however it is that we think about that kind of thing. So I've put some labels here saying that what happens is that your thoughts start to take shape as you progress with this thinking. The thoughts start to coalesce into ideas so that they start to formulate some shape. They start to take on a kind of like a message sort of thing, if that makes any sense. And then further down here, the words start to convey what we actually want or what we need. So at this point, we've gone from a vague, ill-defined, do we buy a car or not, to it has to have 4 doors, it can't be yellow, it's got to have these kind of tyres, it's got to do this, be capable of that. And we get down to some real specifics, which I've coloured the screen with the grey background. As the narrowing comes down, we get more specific. If you get that general idea, then this is pretty much the thought process for anything. Like I said, this could be whether we're buying a house, buying a business, starting a relationship. Those kind of things will occur to us during the time when we're having a shower or while we're walking down the street or randomly at various times. The interesting thing about this is when you start to look at it, none of what I just said is meant to say that we don't impulse buy. So of the three of you sitting right in front of me at the moment and all of those of you at home, hands up if you've ever impulse bought. You've just like off the spur of the moment just bought something that you can't explain why. Chris, Rick, Ed, okay, 100% of the room here. Let's see how many of you at home have impulse bought. And so what I'm going to suggest to you is that when your friend says, oh, look, my new Maserati that is been looked after like it's a baby, it's never been taken out in the rain, it's low mileage, it's never been thrashed, it's just absolutely perfect and I'm selling it for 50 grand less than market value, maybe that's enough to appeal to you. Maybe, if it's not a car, maybe you live on the south side of the harbour for 40 years, visit friends on the north side, see a house you fall in love with, and boom, 2 weeks later, now you live on the north side of the harbour, having spent your life bagging people who live on the other side of the harbour. So I'm not saying that we think everything through. There's always the impulse buy, and marketers know that the impulse buy constitutes a large proportion of what's going on in terms of how they sell things. But if you look at it from this point of view, I want you to imagine you actually got the Maserati. Now, it really doesn't matter whether it's a Maserati or something else. It really doesn't matter whether you care about cars or not. Have a think about it from this point of view. Would you just get that thing up to 130 k's an hour and see about getting it on the road? Like, would you just jump in and flatten the accelerator, or would you be a little bit more specific about it? And yet what happens in conversation boils down to this. With communication, what we do is we just throw out 1,000 words, thinking about those words as we're going, reassembling them as we're going, expecting everybody to understand what it is that we are just figuring out as we say it. Does that make sense? The big difference here between the car and the communication is we gave some thought to the purchase of the car. When it comes to speaking, we tend to, finish this sentence for me, we tend to spill it out. We tend to open our mouth, let the words come out, and if the words aren't how we want them, what do? We rearrange it. We're kind of, oh, have you ever said, blah, 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 but now that I've said that, that's not what I mean. What I actually mean is da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's the opposite of the process of buying the car. It's just and where 500 words will be good, if they didn't work too well, then 1,000 is going to be even better. And we try and rearrange them as we go. Yet with the car, the perfect car could turn up. If it's the wrong colour, you won't even touch it. So the deal killers are there in the car or the house or the boat or the whatever, but in conversation we'll just throw it out there. So imagine that we did get that thing, hit the gas pedal and then try and get it on the road. It's completely us about face. But what we do in communication is we kind of throw out a Scrabble board full of words and figure and see if we can rearrange them as we go. And what most people think about, what most people do when it comes to thinking and communicating is that most people think about what they said long after they said it. So this here is a critical thing in communication, is how often have you found yourself saying, I should have thought about that before I started. Therefore, when it comes to communication, there's a bunch of things that we know to be true. The first is that the purpose of communication is to convey what does not easily fit into words. You see, if it fitted into words, if words worked, if it was just words, I could just email you and you'd have a perfect understanding of what I was getting at. Now, there's a reason why you guys are here live today. So let me hear what that is. So, Rob, can you grab us a microphone? Ed, just behind you, grab the microphone. You may not use it yourself, but pass it around. The reason for being here live today boils down to what? Any one of you can have a go. Because I could email you this thing.
Because we get to hear your inflections, we see your body language, we can learn so much more from that than if we sat down and read a textbook.
Bingo. If this was in a textbook, where would it be? And I'll just point. Where would it be? It would not be in between your ears, it would be?
On the bookshelf.
On the bookshelf, which is? A place where you store knowledge, except that we don't open them. In other words, our plan is I'm going to read that. We had some people in here last week, and somebody, I said, don't touch it, it'll fall over. And so somebody raced over and took a photograph of that because their intention was what? For those of you at home, I'm pointing at the bookshelf in our office. This is basically stuff that we've spent money on. The obvious thing is I'll get all the knowledge that Paul's got or some of the knowledge that Paul has got by reading what Paul's read. Probably what Paul reads is worthwhile. So they've photographed it. What are the chances? Because that photograph has made it around that group, right? So everyone in that group has a copy of that photograph. What are the chances that those books are going to get read?
Nearly zero.
Nearly zero. Yep. In fact, we could say it's probably true that 10% of books get read 10% of the way into the book.
Bronwyn's pointing out that the purpose of being here is to engage your brain before opening your mouth.
Ah, beautiful. Which Bronwyn is that? Which Bronwyn are you saying that? Is that Bronwyn O'Brien or Bronwyn Walker? Bronwyn O'Brien, you're right, mate. So engaging brain before opening mouth, very good thing. That's really the kind of summary of what I've been saying so far. If it was just words, we could have emailed it to you. The chances are you wouldn't have finished reading the email. So we have an experience communicating with our clients. When we tell our clients things that are important for them to know, the problem is getting them to read the email. What do you reckon? What are the chances? I had we had 14 people here last weekend. We sent them the email telling them when and where and how and all the rest of it. What are the chances that one of those people texted me on the morning of the gig saying, what time do we start? You reckon that might have happened? Definitely that happened. The real question is, how many people texted me asking, what time do we start? Would we have sent them an email? Yeah. What we've learned is, we've got to send a reminder email. We've also learned that anything that we put in an email that is below the fold, chances are they won't see it. What we're talking about here now is learning how to compress a message into the bit that fits on your screen. That means we're guessing how big people's screens are and getting messages to stay inside that because there's a likelihood that they won't scroll down. Your advantage for being here or being online is that you get to ask the questions and clarify. With the written word, you don't get to clarify. You just look at it and then you've got to try and figure out what it is. Think about this. The purpose of communication is to communicate what is not easy to communicate. So it pretty much boils down to this. Communication starts as a bunch of ideas or thoughts or feelings that are swirling around in my subconscious. I've got to get them across to you. So I want you to remember, we'll give you an exercise to do. I want you to remember the last time you're down the beach and tell me what you get in your head. This is an exercise for you at home as well. Last time you're down the beach, what pops into your head? Chris, what pops into your head?
The sounds of the surf and the feel of the breeze and the warmth of the sun.
Okay, so that's a sound and a, did you say a smell?
No.
That would have been a feeling. Part
of
it,
but certainly the feeling of the breeze and,
on
and
your,
the warmth of the sun.
And so, okay, so that's two feelings on your skin.
A bit of auditory,
one,
a bit of kinesthetic. And
yeah, so you're probably a very kinesthetic person.
Tend to be, yes.
Tend to be. So you operate how things affect you. Okay, just pass it. Ed, when I said remember the last time down the beach, what occurred in your head?
Sense of freedom.
So it's a very powerful emotion. Okay, good. Rick?
Again, I think just the warmth of the sand and the sight and sound of the ocean, the relaxation of the sense of fun.
Okay, so go on in.
One more. Smell. My wife, we would just say, just smell it.
Yeah, just smell it, Mary quite often buys flowers to put in our house. And my first instinct is to say that they look great, but I have to smell them. Yeah. The experience is not complete until I smell them. Quite often I'm disappointed. If she's bought roses from the service station instead of roses from the florist, then the chances are there's no smell. None at all, because they're just bred in hot houses.
Nerida is saying peacefulness.
So Nerida's saying peacefulness. Thanks, Nerida. Basically what we're talking about here is that what you're trying to do with words is tell me something that doesn't fit in words. Because when we say peacefulness, Nerida says peacefulness, Ed says peacefulness, but Rick, you said freedom. Oh, you said freedom. So both of you mentioned freedom, which is a deep concept, which freedom, we would have to say, what do you mean by that? Does that make sense? Because freedom, and peacefulness, very, very different experiences for all of us. So communication is there to make these things transfer from my head to your head. Because when I say beach, I've got a different thing than you've got. But we're trying to communicate that to each other. When you look at that, then basically pretty much it boils down to I've got these jumble of feelings and ideas and pictures, and they're all messed up with in emotions in my subconscious. So there's a bunch of non-verbal things, which is feelings, ideas, pictures and emotions. They're swirling around, mixed like a casserole, flavouring each other, influencing each other like a casserole does. Some people like their meat, their salad, their veggies, there are other things separate. Other people prefer a casserole. Your subconscious is very much like the casserole. The flavours are influencing each other. What we've got to do is then convert them into separate words to see if we can get those words to convey what I mean. So what I do is I very poorly translate these emotions, these feelings, these pictures, these sensations into words, assuming that they're going to make exactly the same pictures in your head as they do in mine, never understanding they can't, they won't, and they never will. And I'm going to give you an example from my own recent experience, less than 24 hours old. So you see Rob, our AV genius down the back there, last night we were talking about beer. And what do you reckon was the main method for communicating? We weren't drinking it. We were talking about it. So how do we explain the difference between pale ale and lager?
Bitterness.
So grab the mic.
Probably talk about things like bitterness and colour. And
colour came up. Bitterness. Didn't
then you talk about other flavours that might be in it, whether it's
there was a vague flavour, and one of them was I hate those beers that taste like they've got honey in them. That's a negative, right? That's not a description of what is, it's a description of what we don't want. Any other guesses? This is funny. Any of you guys at home onto this? What are you going to say, Rick?
I think it's very difficult to try and explain flavours. They're extremely hard to describe unless you can pick out various characteristics like a floral flavour or particularly a strawberry flavour or an apple cider flavour or something like that, that you can put into words.
Fruit flavours are easy because we can describe the fruit. Everybody's had an experience of strawberry. We know it's nothing like pineapple. Does that make sense? Beer, different concept. We do describe that, we use these words, floral, bitter, those kind of things. But I just lost it last night because Rob was telling me about his favourite beer and he said its name and then he went, oh. And the major reason I want to try that beer is not what the name, not what he said. And his eyelids were fluttering and his head went da da da. And if you weren't in the room, it sounds like the name. Does that make sense? So the major method for communication from Rob to me about his favourite beer was a body movement that came with a word called "oh," but it was all about what happened to his eyes and his forehead and his head tilting back and the obvious pleasure that he was remembering, and it had nothing to do with it's a light colour, it's a dark colour, it's got this sort of bubbles, that sort of bubbles. The technical aspects were never going to transfer what made me decide the next time I see that I've got to try it. In other words, the message got across quite clearly, but technically, you can't put that in an email, you can't put that in a textbook, you can't put that in the written word. So communication can never really, without the spoken word and without all of the body language that goes with it and all of the tone and inflections and expressions on our faces, can never really do it without all of that added in. So what that means is that the first step that we have to take when it comes to getting that conversation to happen, I guess what I'm trying to say, I'm struggling to say this, is that what I have to realise is that something different happens inside the head of each person I'm talking to. And so if I'm talking to three people, the chances are that there are three versions of what I said.
May I comment?
Please, yeah.
As you were speaking then, the word that immediately came to my mind was the concept of leaf, and you start talking about a leaf to someone, and yep. I want to imagine if there's 100 people in the room, there'd be 100 different concepts of what a leaf is.
Yes.
Now, some might be thinking, oh, a great big palm leaf. Others might be thinking of the gum tree and the special colour there, and yep. so on. So, you know, this whole thing of concepts is just crazy, isn't it, in terms of trying to get a single understanding.
It's amazing trying to get a single understanding because, as you said, leaf, I went straight to, without thinking how to do it, the association in my mind was basil leaf goes with tomato, my favourite taste. So I've taken leaf and gone into food. Someone else has gone to palm tree. Someone else has gone to fluttering. Someone else has gone to, they're all over my lawn and I'm trying to get them off. Yeah, that's one word.
I think the least specific you are, the greater the variation in understanding is going to be.
Yes.
And the problem is, if you get really specific, people shut down real quick.
Well, people shut down because it takes so much to be specific. So if you've ever read a legal document, if you've borrowed some money from a bank, like a mortgage or something, and if you read the thing, it really just needs to say you're going to pay the money back. But it'll say that every way possible. So it'll say you'll pay the money back. But then another paragraph will say you will not fail to pay. And then another paragraph will say you will make all diligent efforts to pay. So they're going to say what they mean in as many different ways because specifically it can be wriggled out of. Interesting thing. If you look at the law, you would think that what we're doing is we're nailing things down. You know, you borrow the money, you pay it back. Between you and me, that's so simple, it's ridiculous. As soon as you go into a contract, then when someone fails to do whatever they said, then there's going to be an argument in a court about the meaning of the contract. And yet, what they've put into the contract is every possible way to say, give us the money back. Staggering concept. You're right. As soon as it goes technical, people fall asleep because they don't understand, they don't want to understand. We don't want to devote all that brain power to understanding something fairly simple. Therefore, the first thing for us to understand is these different pictures form in the heads of the people we're talking about. Ed's talking about the different meanings of leaf. I'm going to say there's not only the different meanings of leaf, there's a place you take it to. So I took it to food. But where I took it with food was to my favourite flavour. And I go, okay, basil, why? Because my favourite taste is tomato. So I grow tomatoes because I love the taste of them. I've grown tomatoes most of my life. It's one of my things that I do so that I can get this taste that I remember from my childhood. In other words, the reason is ridiculous. But I get this taste that I remember from my childhood. I have very pleasant experiences of being both quite young, 10 or 12 years old, and as a teenager. The whole way through summer holidays were about white fresh bread that we bought from the baker and tomatoes and onions sliced up and made into sandwiches, and we had those after water skiing. So we'd go water skiing, maybe a bit of sailing, come back home for lunch, and here was this just flavour-packed thing. But I think the taste of tomatoes actually got to do with spending time with my mum and dad and my brothers and sisters water skiing and having fun, and that was at the end of it. So does a tomato taste mean tomatoes, or does it mean connection and humanity? And here I am as an adult, 67 years old, probably that's well into adult, wanting to reproduce from the past and tasting the tomatoes that are not there because I'm making them be there. In other words, how accurate is my experience of the tomatoes compared to someone else's? And then if we start to talk about the taste, etc., away we go. Interesting enough, you grow tomatoes and you're like me, you grow too many because the worst thing is none. Or the worst thing is running out or not enough. So I grow lots of them, which means I give them to the neighbours. So my next door neighbour says the same thing about tomatoes as Rob says about the beer. So I say, would you like a tomato? And here's this big, ripe, red, juicy, flavourful tomato. And he goes, oh, would I like a tomato? I love tomatoes. And once again, it's not the tomato. It's the message coming to me is not, I love tomatoes. The message is this man's life just took a step up for a few moments. For a little while he was in heaven, and that was conveyed to me not by the words but by the actions that he was taking, the expressions on his face, those kind of things. So if we add to this, then if I'm talking to three people, there's going to be three versions of what I said. I kind of already did that, but what I want to do is kind of point it out to you diagrammatically. So let's say that unbeknown to me, my three listeners are reacting to what I'm saying, but they're doing that differently. In other words, the way that they're doing that is I'm saying something, it doesn't really matter what it is that I'm saying. The person who is the most like the rip, tear and bust person amongst them, you understand what I mean by that? The crasher or the crash through kind of person, the ready, fire, aim person. Their response to me talking, in other words, they've heard it. They've heard exactly the same words as the other two people, but they're giving themselves permission to go and do something that I've never actually mentioned because part of their nature. So this is more than just the words. It's the words and then the consequences of the words. Does that make sense to you guys? They're giving themselves permission to go do something that I only vaguely alluded to. The second person, and this is just random examples, the second person is a conservative one. And the one who kind of doesn't want to have change happening is looking at all the pain in the ass changes that are going to have to be made in the business just because I've got some weird idea about how things are going to have to be different. So they're mounting their resistance or just taking the view that if it's different, it's bad, which is totally different to the rip, tear and bust person who's ready to get going and can't get out of the meeting quick enough because they're going to get on with something that I didn't say to get on with. And then the third person, I could have had 20 people in this conversation, and quite often we do talk to 20 people. So the rebels, they're going to rebel. And so what the rebels are thinking about is who can I recruit into my view that we've got to get Paul and make him come to his senses because we're going to resist what he's trying to make happen because they've interpreted what I'm making happen completely different to how I meant it. So these are just three random examples. You don't really need to understand them in any great depth except to understand that what's happening here is interpretation by other people is according to their preset. It's according to their story. It's according to how to their view of the world. So it's not just that we have different meanings for different words. It's not just that we got an idea that something should be done differently. It's actually this concept of we're talking to people who've got different presets in their minds about how the world should be treated, what the world is like, and what they need to do about that. It, basically, we can summarise all of this by saying, okay, so what happens is they go off and they do something before I ask them to do it. In fact, I never said to do it, but they go off and do it anyway. And that's contrary to how I would want it done. And in fact, if you looked at it, not only did it contrary to how I would want it done, but I actually never said to do it, and I never said anything about getting on with it. Does that make sense? This is kind of like a summary of the three people, because what happens in communication is not just the words and not just what the words mean, but what am I going to do to, what are my responses and reactions and consequences of those things being said or done, depending on my interpretation of them. Therefore, there's a few things that you should do before you actually open your mouth. So congratulations, Bronwyn. You picked it in one. Engage brain before opening mouth. I'm going to say, okay, before you open your mouth, and I think it's fascinating that you use those words, step one is what we call the setup. Now, the setup basically prevents what we call the upset. So this is an expression I've borrowed from Mary from her Journey to Intimacy program. And essentially what she says is quite often setups are what creates upset. So we're going to use them the other way around. So the questions we want to do in preparation before we talk, in other words, if you can have a conversation with yourself about should I buy a car, then maybe you can have a conversation with yourself about should I open my mouth before I do some thinking. So questions you might want to ask yourself, is this the right time for this conversation? Is there a location where we should have this conversation? Who needs to be present or absent in this conversation? Are there people I should include? Are there people that I specifically should exclude? How long is this going to take and do we have the time for it? In other words, is it a long or a short conversation depending on my view of that? Are there preventable things that can go wrong? For example, interruptions or arguments or other meetings or planes to catch or places to go. Are there things that I could take care of to make sure that this is going to go well? And am I emotionally ready? Am I in the right kind of emotional condition to be able to conduct this conversation at this point in time? Now, I've got a note down the bottom here in green, and it basically says, at this point, in this conversation between you and another person, you are two people. You are one of the combatants, you're one of the respondents, you're one of the participators, and you're also the referee. What I see is that, you know, my clinical experience is when we work with couples who are fighting with each other or at war or have communication issues that need resolving, the first thing we have to do is get a referee in place. That's my job as a referee. But quite often in your own personal life, you can be handicapped by the fact that you need to be the referee and one of the contestants in the situation. And if it's going to be acerbic, if it's going to be difficult, if it's going to be some level of conflict, then being one of the combatants and or one of the participants and the referee is still necessary. It's difficult. It places an extra load on you. But if you don't take up that responsibility, you're basically in a referee-less environment. And the problem with the lack of a referee is what? If you think about it in terms of any kind of game that needs a referee, football, tennis, anything where there's an umpire or a decision maker, can any of you tell me what is the value of the referee or the umpire? What's the, why bother? What's their role?
Oh, just to get a level playing field so that everybody knows the rules and has to abide by those rules.
Yeah, because there is a set of rules established. I'm going to talk to you guys about a set of rules for communication. But a set of rules doesn't mean we have compliance. A set of rules, you know, there's a rule that says you don't drive down the highway more than 100 k's an hour. You'll see plenty of people doing that. There's a difference between rules and compliance. I'm going to suggest to you, we're going to talk about the rules in communication and the guidelines that you should follow. But quite often, we need somebody who's going to enforce those rules. Because the purpose of the referee is to make the ruling when other people are going to dissent from it. If you've watched a tennis for any length of period of time, any of you followed the tennis for any period of time? What's John McEnroe famous for?
His explosive temper and uncontrolled outbursts.
Yes, because he wanted the referee to make a different decision. His most famous line, "You must be joking! You have to be joking! What's he going on about?" No, it didn't go out, it went in, or whatever. And without a referee, what you get is a rule of the loudest. Think about that in communication. Without a referee, without someone to push the rules and to enforce the rules, what you get is the most powerful person wins, and they may be in the wrong. They may be completely counterproductive. They may be actually the worst thing that could happen to the conversation. That makes sense? Okay, so think about that from the point of view of, we'll get to the rules, and they're not really very difficult. But like all rules, there's a difference between knowing the rules and ensuring that they are complied with. So that's the thing we want to look at there. Second thing you want to do before you open your mouth is have a look at what is the purpose of this communication. So I've looked at times, places, participants, all those sort of things. I'm now going to think about, well, what is the purpose of the communication? I've got a funny thing coming up here. This one here. If you don't know what you want them to do, neither do they. And I first learnt this when I was speaking on stage and I was talking to hundreds of people, and what I wanted them to do was go and buy our product. And I didn't understand that I needed to say, now is the time that it is okay for you to stand up, get out of your chair. That's two versions of stand up and get out of your chair. They're two different things. They're two different ways of saying the same thing. Now is the time for you to get out of your chair, stand up, walk down the back, and make sure you get one of these things. We've only got a limited number. Because if I didn't say to the crowd, now is the time to do that, they'd be sitting there wondering if now is the time. And if people are wondering, they don't do anything. So think about this from the point of view of, okay, so as a result of this conversation, what do you want to have happen? For example, is this just going to be like a sharing of feelings? Mary and I quite often do that. I'll say to her, as my partner, there's something I want you to know. I'm feeling blah, 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 blah. I'm feeling extremely confident about such and such. I'm feeling very doubtful about such and such. I'm tired, I'm lonely, whatever it is. So there's a whole bunch of things that I might want to do that are just communicating feelings. And then maybe I'm going to be requesting that somebody does something. Hi, Sigrid, come and grab a chair anywhere there. Just watch that camera, mate. So, you're right. You're cool there. So the purpose here is, remember, what we're saying is, okay, what is the purpose of the conversation? And the way that we determine the purpose of the conversation is to say to ourselves, what is the end result? What is the thing that I want to have happen? Where do we want to go? So you might want to be sharing. Maybe you're requesting that they do something or that they stop doing something. So I'd like you to take out the garbage more often. I'd like you to stop taking out the garbage. I'd like you to bite your nails or stop biting your nails or whatever it is at that level. And then are you crying out for help? Maybe the purpose of this conversation is to enlist some aid for yourself on a project or personally, or whatever that might be. Is it an update? Let me tell you what happened. It's important. You know, for example, we've got a lot going on in the background at the moment. So my mum who's 91, has just told us that she doesn't want to live by herself anymore. So we're moving her into my sister's place. That means we're looking at, do we sell the place that she's in, because it belongs to Mary and I? Do we sell that? Do we rent it out over Christmas? And so sometimes the update is just about, hey, I found out how much we get for rent. There's no decision there. It's just an update on in terms of information. And then, am I asking for a behaviour change? So these are all possibilities, and really what we're saying here is, without knowing what you want to have happen as a consequence of the communication, then there's very little chance that you're actually going to pull it off in the way that you want. And that's a critically important thing. And then down here in the green, I've got, okay, how will you measure that the listener has understood what it is that you're wanting them to do or stop doing or whatever? If you have no way of measuring whether the message has got through, whether they've understood, then you are totally in the dark about the effectiveness of that communication. Now, this is just something you would think about. Remember, what we've got on the screen here is before you open your mouth, two steps before you open your mouth. I wish it was just two. The third thing before you open your mouth boils down to, okay, so let's have a look at it from this point of view. What is in this casserole of feelings, images, thoughts, ideas that is rolling around in my subconscious, and how am I going to try and describe them? Because if you're not clear, the chances are you won't have the words to describe them either. This is probably the most important part of your preparation, is to say, okay, what do I feel and what are the words that describe those feelings? Bearing in mind that these words can very much make different pictures in different people's heads. That's almost a guarantee. So how am I going to do that? So one of the ways to do that is to say, okay, so what is the effect of these concepts? In other words, I understand the concepts, but what is the impact they have? What difference do they make to somebody? Is it got to do with how I feel? Is it got to do with what I'm expecting? What is the effect of these concepts? Because, you see, we quite often say things assuming that the effect of them is implied. When I was doing counselling for people who lost houses in the bushfires in 2003, some people would say, we lost everything, meaning that was bad. Others said, we lost everything, meaning that was good. The ones who were meaning that it was bad were using exactly the same words as the ones who were meaning that it was good. The ones who were meaning that it was bad were saying, we lost everything, we don't know how we will recover, the loss is traumatic. The ones who were saying that it meant it was good, we lost everything, and that's great because we get to start again. We've got an insurance payout and now we live our lives the way we want. So what is the effect of these concepts? Not what is the concept, but what is the effect of those concepts? This is something that we miss in communication. We expect that because I would be devastated, so would you. It's called projection. I remember I spent 2 or 3 weeks designing a brochure for our business, for our product. This went back when we lived in Sydney, better than 30 years ago. And I went to my friend who worked for us and I said to him, here's a brochure, 2 or 3 weeks' work. The reason it was 2 or 3 weeks' work was this is pre-computers. So it was done with rulers and pencils and... Do you remember Letraset? Colouring Letraset. So I got it and I said to him, there you go, 3 weeks' work, it finally exists. And he goes, no one will buy that. What he meant was, he wouldn't, but he was doing what we all do, and that is, if I wouldn't, obviously, none of you would. Does that make sense? It's a projection. So that's part of this kind of, the picture in my head, I assume, is the same as the picture in your head, and I'm going to run with that, not understanding that there's an effect of the concepts. In other words, the concepts that I'm dealing with and that I'm wanting to find the words for, once I've found the words for them and I can convey that concept to you, that's step one. Step two is, but what is the effect of that concept? Am I happy? Am I sad? Am I glad? Am I lonely? Is it going to ruin things? Is it going to make things better? How is all that going to work, etc.? So if you don't know what the effect of the concepts is, then you are probably not going to convey it in the words that you're using. Next thing, most of us assume that our listeners are going to react in exactly the same way. That's what I just talked about with my friend. He's assuming that everybody in Sydney, at that point there were 3.8 million people in Sydney, and he said, nobody will buy that. I listened to that literally and I thought, hang on, if 1% of the population are crazy, they'll buy it. 1% of 3.8 million people with massive sales, so we'd be okay. It's a totally different way of looking at the situation. So be aware that what's going to happen is that some people think their house burning down is a disaster, and other people think, fantastic, we get to start again, and everything in between. Got that? Nod your heads. Give me some sign that that makes sense. Okay, cool. Okay, number four. What words are going to describe what it is that I've just worked out? So the first three steps are really preparation. This one is still preparation. We still haven't opened our mouth. And the question is, what words are going to describe what it is that I'm wanting to say? For example, if you're wanting to convey that you are feeling tired and hopeless, how would you do that? And we're going to do an example. I'm going to get you to grab the microphone, whoever's ready to start. One of you pick the microphone up. Pick it up, Rick, and pass it to Sigrid. You're not ready. Ed, how would you say you were feeling tired and hopeless? I'm not expecting you to get this right. I'm just asking how, because we'll get two or three of you to do this. You'll all use different words. What would you say? I'm feeling tired and hopeless. What would you say?
I'm not travelling too well today.
Uh-huh. Cool. Somebody else have a go? How would you say that, Chris? What's your way of saying that?
A lot of difficulty.
The reason you guys are struggling is I've already put it on the screen. That's what I'd say,
actually. That's
what you'd say. Literal. You go literal, yep. What would you say, Chris?
Probably just don't have any energy today and won't get anything done. It's feeling flat.
Uh-huh, yep. Last night, we hit the wall. And so at around about 6 p.m., when I still had a fair bit to do, I said to Jules, I've hit a wall. That's me saying, I'm tired and hopeless. She said, yeah, I'm brain fried. Meaning, I could run around the block, but ask me to come up with a sentence would be difficult. Does that make sense? That's an interesting concept. I could run around the block, but I'm not capable of thinking of the next thing. So we use words. I'm saying I've hit a wall. What's the visual for you? Hit a wall. What's that? What happens in your head? Bang. Yeah. Brain fried. What's the visual?
Someone physically hitting a wall.
Yep. Someone physically hit. What about brain fried? What's the visual for that? I've got a frying pan with. We've all got different pictures. What were you going to say, Jason? You were going to have a go at, how would you say, tired and hopeless? Okay, so I'm done. And then you describe which types. And the more words you use, the more done you are. That make sense? Okay. You want to have a go at this, Sigrid? For those of you at home, we're fiddling with the microphone.
I'd probably say I'm not travelling very well at the moment.
I'm not travelling very well. I need a rest. Yeah. What was the last bit?
I need a rest.
I need a rest. Okay, cool. So we got, you understand how we're all going to say different things? Watch this, because what you're wanting to do is convey I'm tired and hopeless. Sigrid was the only one who went to the next level and said what needs to happen. Does that make sense? I'm done. I'm flat on, what did you say, Ed? I'm not travelling too well. I don't know if you said anything, Rick, but what Sigrid did was go to the next level and say, what are the consequences of that? What are the consequences of this? What do I need now? So what are the consequences of tired? When we look at the word tired, I'm going to suggest to you that it can mean a lot of different things. Maybe it means I've lost hope. Maybe it means I want to give up. So quite often what happens is that we say one when we mean the other. So we say tired and hopeless. Well, I'm feeling, in this case, I've chosen the word tired because sentences are hard. So we're just going to deal with one word. So I've chosen the word tired. Maybe it means lost. Maybe it means lonely. Maybe it means demoralized. So when it comes to communicating, what are the consequences of tired? Because that's what you'll really want to communicate. Sigrid nailed it when she said, I need a rest.
So I need time out.
I need time out. It's not an unusual thing to go on and say it, but quite often we leave it as if it's understood. Does that make sense? Okay. If we have another look at another example, what are the consequences of hopeless? Well, maybe hopeless means that you're despairing. Maybe hopeless means that you feel defeated. These are all optional, by the way. Hopeless might mean, you know, I just need 5 minutes. So what does hopeless really mean? Because what we tend to do is we say one and mean the other. This is a question of vocabulary. Now, people who work in the communication field understand vocabulary matters and they get an extensive one. What I'm going to suggest to you is that vocabulary is not the most important thing. Images are. When we say, I've hit a wall, mostly that's an image-based kind of an expression. I'm brain fried is mostly an image-based kind of a thing because you get visuals. So what happens is we say tired and hopeless, but we expect our listener to understand that I'm feeling despairing, demoralized, hopeless, lost, all the words that they're in purple. So I'm saying this thinking you're getting the purple. Does that fit? Okay, so one last bit of preparation before we move on, before we actually get to the point where you open your mouth. So we're still at the point where you haven't said anything yet. With me? Okay, what does this image tell you? There's 1,000 ways to interpret an image. You can't get this wrong. What's the first thing pops in your head? What does this image say to you? Grab the microphone, John.
Just looks like he's done with absolutely everything that's gone on around him and he just needs a rest.
Uh-huh. Cool. Sigrid?
I'm thinking homeless and really dejected.
Dejected, homeless.
Very sad and lonely.
Sad, lonely. Uh-huh.
Leave me alone.
Rick's saying, leave me alone. Good. Ed, what have you got?
I've come to the end of the road.
Yeah, I've come to the end of the road. It's kind of like there's nothing else.
I'll come out of left field. Jeez, that was a good night.
Jeez, that was a big night. So, but images do better than words. You'll see images still get massive disarray in terms of interpretation. But we're not going to look at this image and say he's travelling well. We're not going to say that this is a great, you know, he's in a great spot. So far, so good? All right. So when it comes to communicating, can you find an image that does it for you? Because if you can, the chances are you're going to be interpreted accurately. This is a rare and difficult thing to do. But can you find an image that does it for you? So I've got an exercise for you. You guys are going to work in groups of two or three. Sort that out amongst yourselves here in the room. But those of you at home, you need a pen and paper. We're actually going to put all that together now. So the first thing to do is bring to mind a conversation that you need to have with someone that may be difficult. So looking forward, is there something you need to talk to somebody about that may be tricky or is important that you get it right? This could be a professional conversation. It could be a personal conversation. It doesn't really matter. It needs to be one that you don't mind talking about now, because we're going to go through the steps of organising it using those five steps that I just talked about. You clear on that? Okay, those of you at home, pen and paper, and for those of you in the room, then just turn around and talk to a partner. You're going to help each other work it out. So the first thing to do is to just quickly describe to your partner what the conversation is going to be about, like who it's with, and those of you at home, on the top of your sheet of paper, then who the conversation is going to be with and what it's going to be about. And for some of you that I know that are at home, then it's going to be something like, it's going to be with Fred about the need to have them, you know, spend more time with you or whatever it is. So a conversation that has some degree of difficulty and you want to get it right. And we're going to go through the steps with it. So the first thing to look at is the setup. Now, I've given you some words with that, so this will appear on your screen from the point of view of, okay, the setup is who am I talking to, what are we talking about, where is it going to be, when is it going to happen, and how are we going to do that. And this square is for you to fill in. So essentially what happens is that if we put all of those steps that I've just been talking about onto the screen now, then what you do is you fill in the blanks down here, so that what happens is you end up with the preparation all done for this conversation that we're going to have somewhere in the future. The more real this is for you, the more effective it's going to be. So step two is, what is the purpose? And that's, you know, what do you want to have happen as a result of the communication? And then step three is, okay, what are the feelings and the messages that I want to get across? And the words I've put here in black text are, you know, like, okay, so that's a bit of a description about what we mean by that bit there. So what are the feelings and consequences of those feelings that you wish to communicate? And you fill that bit in here in the blank. And then, okay, what words will I use to do that? My bit of explanation simply says which words convey the essence of the feelings there. Fill that in the blank there. And then finally, is there an image, a universally understood image that I could use? In 90% of cases, there's no image. In 90% of cases, there isn't something that you can use. So for those of you at home, then pen and paper, this is the five steps. Then there's a bit of an explanation, and you just put your pieces in here as you go. And you've got about 6.5 minutes for that. Ready, set, go.